Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting from Atlanta, Georgia, this is The Bright Side with Technisha.
A daily broadcast on real-life issues that will keep you motivated.
And now, here's your host, Technisha.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Bright Side with Technisha. Today is April the 3rd, 2014, and it is feeling so good outside. I'm so glad these temperatures are changing. It's about time. I'm ready to put on my shorts and show my toes. Anyhow, how is everyone doing today? I hope you have been blessed. Of course, if you've been checking out my Facebook fan page and my Facebook page, I have put up there where you can actually send me music request, if you prefer. I have one request from James Washington, Jr. He wants to listen to gospel music, so that's fine. Send me your request. Let me know what type of songs you want to listen to. Hey, that's what I'm here for. I am trying to work on a new app, too, for my show, so that way you could tune in, listen to me daily. So this is all about connecting with you. So please just let me know what it is that you want from me, and I am here. What's on your mind, as Facebook would say. I am just waiting on my guest, Charles Loxley, to call in a moment, which he is on the air right now. So let's get him on. Hi, Charles. How are you?
Good. Good. Yourself?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm blessed. Glad to be here. Glad the weather is better today. I'm ready to show my toes, put on shorts and everything.
Well, okay. Thanks for the update. I wish I was there. We had a 2.5 hour rain delay last night on the ball game, and today it's been raining all day. So it's definitely April showers in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it goes right along with April. Where are you at now?
Well, currently, Technisha, I'm in Cincinnati.
Okay.
Cincinnati, Ohio, and. You know, I hope I'm coming through okay. I have you on my cell phone, but I can flip to a landline if you think I need to.
No, you're doing just fine. It's wonderful. Oh,
okay,
by
thanks.
The way, this is Charles Loxley. Am I saying the name correctly, Charles Loxley?
Well, let's go with Chuck, first of all.
Chuck. Okay.
Chuck, and the last name is Locy, L-O-C-Y. It's just like when you're in the ocean, you're on the high seas or the low seas. So
okay. So Chuck
okay.
Loxley. So I'm here with Chuck Loxley, and he's the author of many books. One is What's in the Well Comes Up in the Bucket, I Am That, That Is in the Well, Special Challenges, Inspired Families. And I think I am missing one, Chuck, because you are the author of four books, right? Am I missing one?
Yeah. The last one, the most recent one, is a book called The Huff Manor. And
okay.
That one was recently completed, and it's, it'll be out later this year. It's going through the publisher's editing right at the moment, and it's my first novel, okay? So all
okay.
The other ones are sort of like inspirational or motivational books, well, with the exception of... Special Challenges, Inspired Families. That's kind of a biography, but we can talk about those in more detail here in a few minutes.
Oh yeah, I'm happy for you. It's got to be hard work trying to publish books, but the one that you sent me, I Am That, That Is in the Well, is a addition to What's in the Well Comes Up in the Bucket. So
yeah,
Chuck,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead, Chuck. What were you about to say?
Well, I was going to say is, I happened to have that one handy one day, and so I thought, oh, I got to get this out. So I threw it in the FedEx and shipped it off to you. But that really was a successor to my first book, which is, What's in the Well Comes Up in the Bucket, and that's one of those things for your listeners that are either writing books or thinking about writing books. One of the things I discovered, and a lot of authors discover, is that when they're actually, writing a book, they kind of just keep writing and writing and writing and writing. And finally, my publisher said, stop already, stop. You know, what happens is people get, what's the word, nervous that it's not good enough or that no one will like it or that, that you know, I'm not really a good enough author. So instead of getting it published, they just keep writing. It's a very sophisticated form of procrastination because they're fearing the outcome of what they're doing.
Okay.
And it restricts them. So when my publisher said, look, if you got more stuff you want to talk about, put it in your second book. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's what that one's all about. The I Am That that is in the well. It's the second book. And they've been out for a couple of years. I do a lot of speaking on them. I really enjoy the topics. The first book is a bit of a biography where I talk about my childhood and growing up in North Kingsville, Ohio, and my relationship with family and parents and community, and moving around a little bit. The chapter number four, I know you don't have access to it, but chapter number four is a very popular chapter. It's titled "Who Peed in Your Well?" And
oh,
for whatever reason, yeah, I know. For whatever reason, that seems to resonate with a lot of people. I've had people write me and send me emails about how they'll post that and they'll put it on their office door or their office wall, you know, and when someone's comes in to complain to them about something, you know, they kind of point to the side and say, "Hey, who peed in your well? Why are you so upset?" You know,
yeah.
And it's just kind of a funny chapter, but it does resonate well because everyone can relate to that.
I like that. That's almost like the saying, "You must have slept on the wrong side of the bed." Yeah, I like that.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, you get up and you have an attitude, and you're not sure why sometimes you have an attitude, but you do.
Is that kind of relating to the chapter 12 in your book where you're talking about I Am Authentic, where it says such people are not bad people, just people who haven't found their passions or themselves? Because sometimes that's why you be upset. You haven't found that what has intrigued you to be happy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, people, you know, it's like Abraham Lincoln said, you know, people are about as happy as they want to be, okay? And when you hear quotes like that, you begin to realize that, you know, our experience, what you and I are going through today, is not that dissimilar to what people went through 150 years ago, 200 years ago, you know, as far as about their attitude, their relationship with other people, their wealth, their health, you know, every aspect of their life. Granted, it was different because technology was different. Okay, but people still began to always question themselves about, you know, what's this all about? What's my life all about? What's my purpose? Am I really pursuing, you know, my passion? Am I really doing the things I should be doing? And sometimes when the answer is no, or you don't even examine the question thoroughly, people do get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
They do.
I've been doing a lot of research recently on paying attention, okay?
Yeah.
What do you and I as individuals, what do we pay attention to?
Okay.
And do we pay attention to our intentions, or do we pay attention to somebody else's intention?
Okay.
And we do it constantly. You know, I'm sure you've heard about daydreaming, okay? People that daydream a lot. People daydream at work. It's the number one place that people daydream. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. I do it all the time. Yeah. I do it all the time. It's a wonderful thing. The daydream just takes your mind away. Chuck, we have a call on the line, too. How are you calling?
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I never know if this is me. You know who it is. It's Ontario.
Ontario. I'm glad for you calling in.
Yeah, I'm just going to kick back and listen to you guys for a second.
Okay. Well, thank you. So, Chuck, as you was explaining, you were talking about intention.
Well, yeah. There's a study out there called teleology, and it's the study of results. And every time you and I and everybody enter into something, we get results. We may not like the results we get, but we nonetheless get results. And when you start looking at the results, especially if they're unsuccessful, and you start tracking them backwards to what sort of inspired you to move in this direction, you begin to realize that perhaps somewhere along the path, your thinking was faulty or you weren't really paying attention to some particular detail that perhaps you should have. You know, there's a lot of people out there that are very successful people who spend time in their thought process coming up with everything that could possibly go wrong, okay? Now, it's not that they're being negative. What they're just trying to do is to say, well, you know, as a result of taking this action, you know, there's going to be an equal and opposite reaction many times. What possibly could that reaction look like? And could there be an adverse effect as a result of this? And if there is, how do we deal with that? Okay, mm-hmm. So what they end up doing is they start thinking in great detail about all the good things that are going to happen because we want positive results. But then along the way, what are possibly the bad things that could happen? And then systematically make sure you rule those out. So we end up getting results that are consistent with what we claim we want to do. Okay, and that's called the study of teleology, and something I would encourage your listeners to really give some thought to where they are in their life. Okay, what results they've gotten, good and bad. Now, see, this also leads to things like procrastination, where you know you may have done a couple things and had great success, so you're inclined to do those again. And you did other things and had some maybe not so good success, so you tend not to want to do those.
Yeah.
And that's human nature, but are you really becoming a better person by avoiding things that you could or should do?
But, you know, when I think of it, Chuck, it's hard for some people to really get rid of the negative thought. It can be difficult, I think it's just a thought in itself. You just have to escalate that and spiral out and just try to be in control of that. I think all it takes is just really persistence, and you got to understand you and that Ashley, and you're not alone in this. It's just all about the control of your thoughts that pass through that mind that you got to know how to actually just control, basically.
Absolutely.
Much as part of the mind. And then, of course, as we discuss on most of my shows, we have to keep God first. That's point, period.
Absolutely.
Like, be happy. You got to have God in your life. You can't be happy without that.
Yes.
No, I agree.
And if I may interject, I think both of you guys had excellent points. But I think Technisha, I think she kind of like nailed it right on the head. She said, you know, we have to have a positive, you know, mindset with God. That's first. But also as to what I think you were explaining, I think it all comes down to fear also because, you know, it's like you said, we can think of a million positive things, but we let that one negative thing or that two, and it kind of has a ripple effect, and it kind of just overtakes us in a fearful manner. So if we can just lean more on God in a positive side instead of just being in a fearful state, I think that could help.
Yes.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And the thing that God brings to the table for many of us is really, a knowing that we're loved regardless. That what we're doing is a good thing, it's a positive thing, and it's going to help other people because at the end of the day, whether it's a radio show you're doing or whether it's insurance or whether it's auto mechanics, at the end of the day, we're providing some service to other people, okay? And that is part of the mission, I think, that God has given us all is, you know, to go out and prosper, to go out and provide service to other people, let them know that, you know, that they're loved because you're loved. And if we don't do that, you know, if we don't do that, we're not really demonstrating our humanity to each other. I'm glad you brought that up because that's such an important piece of the puzzle. So many times it's me, me, me. You know, it's all about me. And I deserve this. I deserve that. And, it can be kind of shallow sometimes in the thinking, and it's not necessarily service-oriented.
So, Chuck, you wrote all these books. Why?
Well, I'm glad you asked. The reason I wrote the books, and I'm one of those people that was at that crossroad a few years ago that we talked about a few minutes ago, where I had kicked around this book for a long time. I read a book called Personal Accountability by John Miller, and in there he used the expression, what's in the well comes up in the bucket. And when I read that, I thought, you know, I used to hear that when I was a kid, and I know what it means, and I'm going to write a book. But it took me years to actually do it, because it was one of those things where I decided, if you're going to write the book, Chuck, do it. If you're not going to write the book, that's fine, don't do it, but quit agonizing about doing it. So I ended up deciding I'm just going to write the book. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to get it published. I don't know who's going to edit it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it after I write the book, but doggone it, you know, I'm going to get this thing done. If for nobody else, for me. Like I say in my book, I didn't write this book to change your life. I wrote this book to change my life.
Oh, okay.
And when I say that at seminars and stuff that I do, you know, people laugh because they know what it means, because I did decide I'm going to change my life.
Okay.
And this is one way that I'm going to do it. I'm going to let people know that I was challenged, I was fearful, I was insecure, I lacked confidence, but I knew that the bigger goal was to get this book written for whatever reason, and I'm going to do it. And it took me about a year, I guess, to sort of figure out how to do it, to write it, to get coaches involved, you know, other people to help me put it together, and all those sort of things went into it. But I talked about it, I got it done, and I was real happy with it. Then the second book was a snap. It just went really fast.
Well, you know,
so that's why I wrote the book.
Well, see, writing changes your life, like you were saying. We all have this heavily, sometimes, burden on us, and it comes from our past, and we be joyless. So I think writing really helps us. I think it's all authors, and they just sometimes don't admit. I think you're probably the only one. They write these self-help books to say they're helping us, but I think it's all about helping yourself, too, when you're writing. Because somewhere you had to have, yeah, because somewhere they had to have the issues in order to write the book.
Well, it's a passion that people develop. Some people are researchers that come up with these, that write a lot of good material, like books on flow and emotional intelligence, and, you know, authors that write these books. A lot of times they're therapists and researchers. See, that's another thing. Something that happened just recently. I had an epiphany. Okay, put that in a sentence, right? And what it was simply I was having these self-doubts, okay? And my doubts were like, you know, gee, Chuck, you know, you're not a PhD, okay? You're not an author, you know, you're not a medical doctor, you're not a, because you look out there and these people that write books, they've all got these initials after their name, you know, you've seen that, I'm sure, the PhD and all this stuff. You know, it's like we get intimidated by that because we think, well, geez, I've got to be this. But when I sat back and started to look at it, when I sat back and started reading some of their material, I began to realize, while they have a PhD and I don't, that doesn't mean they're a better communicator. That doesn't mean that they're a better, you know, at thinking these things. That doesn't mean they're better at, quote, helping people. Okay, that just means they made a decision earlier in life that took them down this path as opposed to the path I went down. Because we both have life experience that we're bringing to the table. And once I reconciled that in myself, all of a sudden, again, you know, my self-confidence went way up. Okay, because I realized I don't need that. Les Brown doesn't have a PhD behind his name. Zig Ziglar doesn't have a PhD behind his name. You know, you can go right down the line of these great writers and business people and authors and radio show hosts that don't have all these credentials that we assign to people. You see, that gets us back to the philosophy of axiology, and I would encourage your listeners to sort of look at that as well. Because in axiology is when we, you and I as individuals, we assign values to things. And then we either shrink according to those values or we excel according to those values. And when you and I say, they've got a doctor, they must be, or they're a pastor, they must be, or they're, you know, whatever it is, we assign it to them thinking they're better than I am because they've got this after their name. when in reality they're not any better, they're not any worse. Okay, they just made a different choice in their life. Hey, I'm going to slip my. I'm actually getting kind of warm. I'm going to take my sweater off, and if I lose contact with you, I'll be right back.
No time.
Okay, I'm back.
Yeah, that was great.
I would encourage, you know, this whole idea about, you know, values is just another fascinating study, and I just really in the last 3 months started studying more of that. And it's not values that we think of values like, you know, integrity and honesty and character building. You know, those are all virtues, and those are worthy of study in themselves. But but values as far as how you and I make decisions on any given day is a separate study in itself. Like if you and I as individuals, we walked into the mall together, okay, you might find yourself looking at certain stores, and I might be looking at a whole different set of stores because we're just attracted to different things that we put value on. And I know that's a little bit trite. Or like when you're a busy person, you probably open up your email and you see, you know, 50 emails came in, right? So you scan them, like most people, they scan the emails, and then they pick the ones that have the highest value to what's happening in their life at the moment. So we're always doing that on constantly, just about any decision that we're making. You know, we're putting a value on it, and then we're moving forward with it. Things with low value, we tend to ignore. Things with high value, we tend to do. Or we pursue.
Yeah, I do it all the time,
And
I guess that's because the world, we're moving so quickly, we don't have time just to sit there and just think all the time. Everything is at a fast pace. Then you got to look at it too, Chuck. We have so much of the technology. Who has time? Don't nobody even really communicate anymore face to face. We're all going through social media, and we're just texting each other. Hey, how you doing? Instead of picking up the phone, okay, how are you today? So I think the world also plays a part on all this with us.
Well, I think there's a whole new development taking place out there. I'm sure you've witnessed this in Atlanta. Atlanta's a big bustling city, and you go to restaurants and you'll see people sitting around on their cell phones.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they're right across from each other. Yeah. And so we have so much information coming at us so quickly. But yet, what does it really mean? How does it really? Why do we need to be so in touch with all this information? Okay, is it about being insecure? Is it about not really wanting to develop relationships? Is it about not being rejected? You know, just what is it about it? And trust me, there are people right now studying this phenomenon that's happening not just in the United States but worldwide. This is everywhere.
Maybe it's as Antonio said, maybe it's just the thing called fear. I think we're just too afraid to get out of our shell.
Well, yeah, I think he's got a good point because we do. And fear is one of those four-letter words that begins with F, you know, that we don't talk about enough, okay?
Yeah.
Because it affects everyone differently, of course, but it nonetheless affects them. One of the gifts, I'm going to talk about fear for a second, if you don't mind. One of my gifts in life, and I recognized this early in life, is that I have very little fear of speaking in front of groups of people.
Oh, okay.
Now, I didn't say I was any good at it. Okay, I just said I didn't fear it. Okay, but the other thing that I did fear, or I did lack, was really the confidence to actually pursue that passion, you know, to move forward with it. Because when I'm talking in front of a group of people, just like with you on your radio show, you're providing some service to the community, to the listeners, to everyone that's out there. And you have to have the confidence to do that.
Yes.
Okay? Because if you don't, you're not only shortchanging yourself, but you're shortchanging all the people who's maybe lives you could touch and help and affect. Okay?
Yes.
And it's such an important thing. I gave a talk about a year and a half ago at a Catholic caregivers conference. There was about 500 people there. And we had all different ages. And I was so touched when this priest came up to me afterwards. And because in my book I talk about my relationship with my dad, which was somewhat estranged. Okay. And the priest came up afterwards. He got, you know how when you and I as individuals, when we meet and talk, you know, we're a little bit, we get close, but we're not like cheek to cheek, you know, unless we're, you know, have a tight relationship, but you know what I mean. And this priest got right up next to me and started whispering, you know, to me about his relationship with his dad, almost as if he wanted to talk about it, but he didn't want people to hear about it because he's a priest. You know, and priests, like pastors, are supposed to be above the fray when it comes to, you know, sins and relationships and all those sort of things. And he was very thankful that I talked about my relationship with the dad because that freed him up to feel confident to talk about his relationship with his dad. So it's something that, you know, you let people know that you're a little bit vulnerable, as we all are, but what do I care? You know, because I think that there's really an important, more important message here, and that is to identify, you know, your life, identify things you want to do. See, because our number one responsibility in life, I believe, is to identify our passions, identify the things we want to do.
Yeah.
Our number two responsibility in life is to find the courage to do that. Find the courage to do that.
I think that's a great point, Chuck. And I absolutely think, like, it boils down to, I guess, once you find self-awareness, and once you find self-awareness and, like, hey, this is my purpose, you know, I'm sent to, you know, as I can speak for myself, when I had a fork in the road and, you know, I was, you know, I think we all come to that little rut where we say, do we want to be caught stuck in the middle of a 9-to-5 or a prototypical 9-to-5, or do we want to just take that leap of faith and say, hey, is this for me? This is what I'm more passionate about. And I think we have to just, you know, find out who we are and what our destinies are and what is it that we're passionate about. And I think, like, once we, you know, come to terms and grips with all those things, it'll start to fall in perspective and fall into line as, you know, how we are. And I think our confidence will grow.
Well, it will. It will grow because we realize that we're actually giving purpose to our being, what we're doing.
Yes.
You know, you may quote, feel like you have a job that you're stuck with. But once you realize, you know, this is the bus that I'm riding in life. Okay, and I need to change seats, and maybe I need to change buses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But this is where I'm at right now. I recognize that. Okay, now I need to set about making those changes. Lao Tzu in the Tao Te Ching, he said basically, after enlightenment, you know, chop wood, okay? What that means is that just because you and I as individuals, we have that aha moment or we find that passion in our lives, okay, that's great. That's fantastic. But then you've got to act on it. You've got to do something. It doesn't mean, you know, tear down all your relationships you've had in the past. It doesn't mean storm out of the office and slam the door behind you, okay? It just means start being a different person, a different being, you know, with different motivations, with different inspiration, and the way you talk to other people changes. You know, one of the biggest things in my life in the last 5 years I've noticed, what's your name again? Anterio? Sir?
Anterio.
Anterio, okay. Anterio.
Yeah, Anterio.
One of the things I've noticed in my life in the last 5 years is really being more comfortable about talking about the things we love, okay? Because you and I, when we get into a discussion, we're either coming from a place of love or a place of fear, and it's real easy to tell. You know, it's like in my public presentations, I say, when was your first sarcasm, okay? Mine was when I was 10 years old in the back seat of the family car. You know, I said to my mom, who died and left you king, okay? That's sarcasm. Or it's coming from a place of fear because we're doubting, we're insecure, et cetera. And you can tell that in people if you just listen to them. They'll tell you. where they're coming from. They think they might be funny, and they might be funny, but they're still coming from a place of fear, okay? So talking about love and talking about relationships many times is not an easy thing, especially for a guy. You know, women do it all the time. I listened to that show you did last week with Abigail Rich, I believe.
Yeah.
Great show. I enjoyed that because she talked about an epiphany as well, okay, when she was in that hospital bed, okay? I write about this in my book. I think what Antonio was talking about and what I'm talking about is where most people are, you know, because with what Abigail did, she had a horrific car accident or something, or skiing accident or something, and yes. She found herself in a hospital bed. She had to learn to walk and go to the bathroom and everything all over again, okay?
Yes.
Most of us, thank God, don't go through that kind of tragedy, okay? And when we see other people do it, we're quick to say, well, if I was beat up and like that, yeah, I would go through that too. Well, most of us aren't beat up like that. Most of us, thank God, don't go through traumatic experiences like that. But most of us do question, is this what it's all about? Is this what I'm meant to do? Is this where my heart and passion is really leading me? Is this the best version of me that I can be?
Yes. But you
and
know,
most people don't.
I was just thinking about that when Antonio just mentioned about Runt, because that's what you explained in your book. And I think this was about you and your brother. You rode your bikes on these muddy roads or fields, and when the dirt trail was wet, it was muddy. But in the days following, that mud was harder into rut. And when we hit a rut, the rut only allowed us to go in one direction. Even if that direction may not be the one we want to take, our job becomes to hang on, stay upright, and keep moving. To get out of a runt, we must do the following. Recognize we are in a runt, which I do agree. Consciously decide the runt is not taking us where we want to go. Do an immediate or gradual course correction. Rinse and repeat step 3, and constantly check our bikes in the course. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, we do. We all have been off track. We all have been off track. I think we can agree to that. But we just talked to you the path, the righteous path, I hope, but the path.
You know, there was a great story. It's in my other book, kind of yes. similar to that example, about an airplane that left New Zealand heading
yes,
to Argentina. And what happened was the airplane over this 8,000-mile flight got 1 degree off course. Now, 1 degree off course doesn't mean a whole lot. It sounds like a little bit. But when you take that 1 degree and you spread that out over 8,000 miles, you end up crashing in the Antarctic, and 280 lives were lost because it slammed into the side of a mountain. Now, we constantly have to have course corrections because otherwise we'll wake up one day at age 60 or 65 or 70 or 40, whatever it is. Someday we'll wake up and we'll say, you know, when I was 18 or 22 or 15 or 12, this is what I thought my life would be. What happened? Now we're back to this whole idea about teleology. You know, we got this result. Why did I get this result? Why am I 1 degree a year off course? That's not something to fret over. That's not something to beat yourself up about, because that will not get you anywhere. But that is something to say, I am grateful that I'm here. I'm grateful that I'm having this thought. I'm grateful that I recognize this. Okay?
Yes.
So many people will play the blame game. You know, they'll say, well, you know, if my mom, like I say, if my grandmother was the same age as John D. Rockefeller, okay, why didn't she marry him? Okay. You know, instead of Gilbert Meyer, didn't she marry Rockefeller? You know, my life would be so different. So I'm blaming my grandmother for making choices, you know, 100 years ago that affect me today. Well, you know, I don't know why she didn't marry Rockefeller. She probably didn't never met the guy. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But we get so much into that, and what it does is it detracts from our real thinking about a purpose and passion and where do I need to be in my life. Okay, I'm here in 2014. I have the mental capacity to think about this. Okay, you know, I can speak English. You know, over 1 billion people on the planet speak English. Okay,
yeah.
I live in America. lots of opportunities here. Okay, there's a lot of good things going for you. Just count your blessings, decide what it is you want to do, and set about moving in that direction. Because if I continually focus on who peed in my well, you know, that water's going to stay spoiled for a long time.
But, Chuck, that brings me to a question. Who is the most influential person on the planet, probably in each person's life?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's the subtitle for that book, I Am That, that is in the well.
Yeah.
The most influential person on the planet in your life is you.
Okay.
Without question. You and I and Terrio, we talk to ourselves 1,000 times a day. We talk to ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
And we typically talk to and we typically talk to ourselves in the first person. Okay, I am this, I am that, I am hungry. You know, I am tired, I am smart, I don't sing good, I'm good at math, whatever it is. Okay, I'm mad, I'm angry, I'm mad as hell. You know, whatever it is, we talk to ourselves constantly. And when we get under stress, we tend to berate ourselves. You know, I did it again, I screwed up again, I messed up again, I'm not any good at whatever that is. And it's a habit, and we repeat it. And we've been doing this our entire life. I gave a presentation last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, in Aurora, Ohio. It's what I call my big, small city tour, okay? And I get invited to speak to a lot of smaller towns. And I was talking about public speaking. And I was talking about I Am That That Is in the Well, public speaking. And this guy right in front of the audience says, I'm not any good at public speaking.
Okay.
And I said, stop right there. Repeat what you just said. And he repeated again, I am not any good at public speaking. I said, have you ever had that thought before? He said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, probably thousands of times, as we all do. So whatever it is in our life, we're just reinforcing that. And then you and I as individuals, we want to be correct in our thinking. I mean, that's all part of our ego, our self-esteem, our self-survival is to be right, to be correct. So if you tell yourself all day long, I am not good at, okay?
You're going to start believing that.
Yeah, you'll start believing that because you are right. Now, if you decide you want to be good at something, you just need to start thinking about why you are good at that. I am a good and gifted radio host. I am a good and enlightened radio show caller inner, okay, that sort of thing. Because that's what leads us toward our passion, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm good at a lot of things that I don't like to do. For example, I am probably the best dishwasher unloader in my house, okay? I can unload that thing all day long faster and better than anybody, okay? But I don't go to bed at night saying, I am a dishwasher unloader, okay? I do it because I love my wife, and I do it to help out around the house, okay? So I'm really more of I am a good domestic partner, okay, a good spouse, okay? That's really how I see myself, okay? And part of being a good spouse in my level or hierarchy of values is I help my spouse around the house, whatever that is, okay? And that just takes time for me to learn her values as far as what does she place value on certain activities. And I've learned that unloading the dishwasher is one of those values. It helps her. And I'm sure you do the same thing, and I'm sure Ontario does the same thing. We find out, you know, how to interact with other people. Not to denigrate our own ability, okay, but just to accommodate them because we want their life to be fulfilled as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do agree. I agree with that 100%.
Absolutely. I kind of think it also, like I said, it reverts back to that, you know, that self-awareness, because I think a lot of us, we live in the state of, like you said, Chuck, oh, I can't, I can't, I can't. And it becomes so repetitive to, you know, we can't. If I say I can't lift this box, I can't. But if you find that confidence that muster up or find a different way, I can lift that box. It never said you had to pick it up to lift it. You could get something else to assist you. So it's always going back to that old saying of it's more than one way to skin a cat. So it's just you have to find, I think, you know, a lot of times people just, they don't know how to do things. So instead of just not doing what they think they should do, if this makes any sense, they just don't do anything at all. And that's a form of quitting, and we can never, like, just quit.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. What sort of results are you trying to get? Right.
Yeah, it all depends on whatever you're trying to get.
Exactly.
And you know, I was going back to say,
I do too. You like me, Chuck. I get very excited. I think that's the first step in life that we have to take is self-awareness, because it helps us to create what we actually want and master ours. Basically, it's going to help you to focus your attention, your emotions, your reactions, personality, and behavior, and determine where you want to go actually in life. So we have to grasp that, yes.
Well, we do. You know, just to kind of follow up on Ontario, you know, when I wrote my first book, I used that exact expression, you know, more than one way to skin a cat. And I got to thinking, like, what the heck does that really mean? You know, what does it mean, more than one way to skin a cat?
No,
so I researched it. And you're a Southern girl. Do you know what that means?
Oh, well, I would like to know. What does that actually mean? Because I really, when I grew up listening, I felt sorry for the cat. Did.
Yeah, why not the one way to get a dog? It's actually a Southern expression, and cat, of course, is slang for catfish. And catfish don't have scales; they have a skin, and it actually comes from an old Southern expression. There's more than one way to skin a cat, and being an avid fisherman as I am. I would have to attest that is indeed true. There is more than one way to skin a cat. You see, I think this gets down to my four E's of literature, E like in the letter E. Number one, it has to be educational, okay? And, of course, now that you know there's more than one way to skin a cat, your education has expanded. It has to be, I think, somewhat entertaining, okay, as your show. I've always found it to be entertaining, so that fits number two E. Number three E, I think it has to be enlightening, okay? You have to walk away thinking, you know, I could really use this in my life. I can really take this forward and help with my life, and when my life gets better, everybody around me gets better. And the fourth E in literature is I think it has to be easy to read, easy to understand. Okay, because if it's complicated and if you've got, you know, $15 words in there to try to impress somebody, you know, people aren't going to read it. Most people, as you know, don't read books. They don't.
No, they.
And of those people that do read books, they only read the first 35 pages. So there's a very narrow audience out there that actually reads books. The true motivation for me writing books is so I can do public presentations.
Okay.
I was looking for a venue, and I had heard that authors are in demand, which they are, okay? And just a little bit of an insight. When I talked earlier about I didn't know how to write a book and all that stuff, and I wanted to hire these coaches, but I didn't have any money to hire the coaches. So what I did is I did a manuscript, and I would take my manuscript to social or civic clubs, like the Kiwanis Club and the Lion Club and the Ladies Garden Club, and, you know, you name it. And I would do luncheon and after-dinner speak, talks about writing a book. And I would show my manuscript, and I would say, now, here's where I'm at, and I'm looking to sell advanced copies of the book as a way to raise money so I can finish getting it written, published, and coached properly, because I got fees and I got all this stuff associated with it. And, you know, over about a 6 or 8 month period, people were handing me $10 and $20 bills, and I was taking their name and address and sort of keep track of this. I said, don't worry, I'll come back with your book. And after about 6 months, I raised enough money to go ahead and finish the project. And then I got the project finished, and then that gave me another audience to go back to talk about my book. And guess what happened? More people bought the book when I went back the second time, okay, because I was giving out what they thought was a free book to the people that had paid for it in advance, okay, and now I was giving out, or not giving out, but selling a book to the others that weren't there at that other meeting. So like Antonio said, there's always a way if you're inspired to do it. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I always get is, you know, what's the difference between motivation and inspiration?
Okay.
I get that all the time because people say, oh, Chuck, are you a motivational speaker? And I say, no, not really. You know, people don't need motivation to do the things they love. They really don't.
Okay.
You don't need motivation to do this radio show every day. Okay, you really don't. Okay, you do it because you have a passion for it. You're good at it. You know you're good at it. So nobody needs to call you up and say, hey, it's 11:45. Get on the air. Nobody does that.
Yeah.
Right, because you're inspired to do it. And people need motivation for things they really don't like to do or don't want to do. Okay? That's why when you go to motivational seminars, many times people will be excited for about a day or two, okay, and then it just drops off because it really is not touching their soul is what inspires them, okay. It's maybe appealing to their ego or their sense of self, okay, or they want to look good in front of their coworkers, okay, anything of that nature, but it's not really inspiring them to move forward with their life. And I think that's what your show's about, and I think that's what a lot of the topics you have on your show is about, is finding that spark in your life that gets you going. You know, the word enthuse is a Greek word. It means God within. And we all recognize when we're in the presence of someone who's enthused. And it's a form of charisma. You know, we feel good when we're around them because It's just transferring, the energy is transferring out from them and touching your soul. And it's quietly saying, I'm enthused, I want you to be enthused.
Okay.
And we should be. So it's all God within. When you find somebody that's truly excited about what they're doing, know that it's God within them working out. And when they feel better, you feel better.
Oh, yeah. And keep positive people around in your life. So, Chuck, I know you do a lot of presentations, Chuck. Why is that?
I'll give you two answers.
Okay.
Number one is, have you ever heard people say things like public speaking is the biggest fear that people have? I was in college, I took a class on, I took an elective on public speaking, and people take electives in. People take electives in college because they think it's going to be easy. And so I took that class because I needed to get my grade up to a C-. So the professor says public speaking is the biggest fear in the country, but then again, after all, how many people do you know that actually died on stage giving a speech? And, of course, I raised my hand. And I said, I do. My grandfather, Gilbert Myers, died in 1961 giving a speech on stage. He fell over dead. Well, you know, that sent a hush through the classroom. And then I said, so I always figured if it's so rare to actually know somebody, let alone somebody in your family, you know, what's the likelihood of it happening twice in one family, okay? So it's a pretty safe place to be, number one. Number two, like I said earlier, I always recognized that I was comfortable in front of groups of people speaking. I just didn't have the confidence to really carry it through, to do it. Okay, and it wasn't until I decided I'm going to change my life, I'm going to actually do this public speaking, I'm going to write some books, I'm going to talk about what's in my heart, what's on my mind, okay, and we're going to go from there. And that's what led me to this radio show.
Well, thank you. That's why I definitely, I definitely want to pass off positive feedback. I love to be happy, and that's how I am at work. And I think even the new people recognize that, oh, I like you. It's something about you. Because I had one young lady tell me that. She said, you know, you get negative vibes from people. I said, yeah. She said, but I'm not feeling that from you. I said, because I'm not a negative person. And if I find that you're negative, I'm going to run the other way. Because as I always tell people on my show, if you have issues, there's always a psychiatrist, and you can go lay on their couch and pay all the money that you need to pay. Because I don't need to hear your problems.
Well, that's right. Because, you know, and again, it's, you know, your heart goes out to those people, too, because if they do have issues, then there are people that will help them, okay?
Yeah,
like you say, a psychiatrist, therapist, or a pastor, or a teacher, or somebody that can actually help them, okay? But as you say, that's not me. That's not what I do, okay? I'll set an example for you of someone that's positive and upbeat pursuing their passions, you know, but as far as, you know, sort of getting into your wheelhouse and talking through some of these issues, that's not what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not that you don't care.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not that you don't care. It's just not what you do. Cool. Because, you know, you don't want to get some, by the same token, you and I, we're not therapists. Well, I don't know, you might be a therapist, but I'm not. But I don't want to start counseling somebody, you know, and really maybe even messing up their life a little more because maybe the issues are much bigger, you know, than what I can deal with.
Yes. And then, you know, Chuck, I don't mind listening to people's problems, but, for instance, if I tell you something and you don't take heed to that and it comes back on you again and you want to tell me about it, I don't want to keep hearing the same issue. I don't. It's not, please, go somewhere else with God. You want to do? You didn't want to listen, so move on.
Yeah, I know. I know. We all get in habits, you know, habits of thought. We talked about this earlier. You know, 95%
yes.
of what we think about is pretty much the same thing we thought about yesterday.
Okay.
We just ruminate it. We just kick it around. And we do it again. 5% is that original thought. I have a habit, a good habit, of carrying a little, I call it my antique BlackBerry. But what it is, it's a little piece of leather that holds paper, and I just write notes. And if I have an original thought or a new thought or an idea, I literally write it down. I have just disciplined myself to do that. And then at the end of the day, you know, I look at it, you know, because you and I, it's like dreaming. You know, we have dreams at night, and most of the time we don't remember what they were. But if you woke up in the morning and you actually wrote down that dream, you'll remember that dream forever. Because dreams come to us from where? From where do they come from? They come from deep within inside us. We don't even know where they come from. And that's a whole research in itself. You know, it's not like you and I having this conversation. When you speak, I respond. When I speak, you respond. I mean, that's what we do. But when you're dreaming, it's just all internal. It's just all bubbling up from your subconscious. And the same thing when you have inspiration, it's coming from somewhere. It's like a friend of mine said, Chuck, inspiration is when God is talking to you. It's like, wow, that's powerful. You know, you have this novel idea. So why not, if God is talking to you, do what Moses did, right? Write it down. You know, keep a log of that. Because those are the precious moments when God is reaching out saying, Chuck, why don't you do this? Have the courage to do that. Move forward with this. Here's an idea. Okay, one day the word forgiveness came to me out of the blue. I wrote it down, forgiveness. Why forgiveness? You know, but it began to change my life. I began to forgive myself for all the stupid, petty things I did, people that I had offended or things I had done or selfish thoughts or, you know, just reckless behavior, whatever it was. I had to stop living in fear of my past and start to forgive it and move on, you know, move forward with this new sense of confidence, a new sense of being. And forgive other people, too, because so many times you and I don't know about you, excuse me, so many times I would drag around past memories with me about how I was offended or, you know, I was taken advantage of or, you know, I was beat up emotionally or financially. And I would drag that with me, and when you do that, it stifles your creative and loving thought. It really does. And we're not about, you and I are not about living in the past and living in fear. Right. We're about creating, building, and loving.
Right. Yes. Because that only holds you back. Are you,
right.
Are you ever planning to come to the Atlanta area to speak?
No. I've been to Atlanta many, many times. I've got families that have gone to the Life College down there.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a big baseball fan, so I've been to the Fulton County Stadium a number of times. And I've got nephews that live in the area down there. But as far as coming there to plan to speak, I do not have any engagements on the horizon as far as coming to Atlanta. But I would love to go to Atlanta to speak. It's just a matter of time until I do go to Atlanta to speak. Because Atlanta's got a lot of great venues and a lot of great speakers, and my goal is to be one of them.
Well, whenever you do, we will welcome you with open arms, because that's what we love to do down here. We definitely love to give you our Southern hospitality with honey, sugar, darling. I know that's what a lot of people tell me. They say I love it in the South, because most of my customers, because I work as a waitress at Marriott, they come from the Midwest, the North, and they say, we don't get that. But here they love it. Some don't. But majority of them, they love the little hospitality. And I love it when people come here. But I am truly a Georgia peach. I'm born and raised there. I'm born and raised here, and that's what you seldomly do not find. You seldomly find somebody who still lives in Georgia and actually is from here.
Well, you're right. There's so many, we talked earlier about, our culture is going through a major, major change, and that's one of them. People are moving constantly, much more today than ever.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to stay in your shell now because it's so diverse. I mean, for you to stay in that shell, I find it, ignorant. Some of your older people, probably like your grandmothers and grandfathers who's up in their 80s and 90s, I mean, they're there. Like, they're probably not going to change. But for our generation, why? And maybe some of the baby boomers, I mean, you have to try to cope with it because it is what it is. We do. It's diversity, baby. It's taking over. We're getting business in from different countries. So it's like you have to keep up with the flow.
Yes, you do. But frankly, most people won't take the time to listen to your show or read my books or even ask the questions like, Ontario's asking about, what's it all about, the self-awareness, the self-development, or even ask the questions, what do I want to do? Because by the time they get through high school or college, they've got this told over and over and over again all their life. You got to get a good job. You got to do this. You got to do that. And, that's where their thinking is. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And again, there's nothing wrong with that per se. But the individual needs to do a little bit of self-examination, a little bit of self-awareness. I might be good at lawyering, or I might be good at engineering, or I might be good at being a radio talk show host. I might be good at these things. But is that what I really want to do? I don't need to tell you how many people we think as successful actually destroy their own lives.
I mean,
when you look at, like, athletes and entertainers, I mean, these people that have all the adoration, they have all the money, okay, you'd think, man, they're on easy street. Okay, they got it, man. They got the gift of good looks. They got the gift of good physique. They got the gift of good coaching, okay? They got the gift of living in America. They've got all these things going for them. And then what happens? They self-destruct. They take their lives. They get involved in drugs because there's something happening in their psyche that's just not connecting with who they are, as a whole person. And it's really sad. It really is. And I think part of our mission, as individuals, is to be that loving individuals, be that enthused person, let people know that they're loved, that they're not alone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That there's other people having issues in all walks of life. They're having these issues.
So don't subordinate yourself to anybody else for any reason, okay? Because then what you're doing, you're saying, they're better, I'm less. And we never want to do that. We can be equals, but we can't be better or less, because then again, or just the opposite, I'm better than they are because, okay, that's as false as the opposite of that. And that's it. That takes time to reconcile that, to understand that that's how we have to be, and to be grateful and to be forgiving.
Mm-hmm. I do agree. But now that we're out of the time, Chuck, can you tell us how we can contact you to speak or get one of your books?
Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks for asking. They can go to my website, which is www.passport2passion.com. www.passport2passion.com. And they can email me there from, chuck@passport2passion.com. And right there I've got my three books that are currently in publication for sale. They can go to Amazon.com and, pick up the books there as well. Okay? If they want me to speak, I'll be happy to discuss it with them, as far as the distance and if there's a cost involved, that sort of thing. And we tend to discount nonprofits a little more than profit enterprises, but that's okay. That's how they get a hold of me. Or they can call my toll-free number, which is 1-888-214-3878.
Chuck, I do appreciate you for coming on the show, and thank you for enlightening us with your words and your books. I do thank you so much, and I want to tell you and your family have a blessed one.
Well, thank you. This was the fastest hour of the day. You're very good. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And I just want to say to the people out there, my heart and my condolences go out to the families who are still troubled by the missing plane. I really hope things come around for you. You just have to believe and just know that God has it. Tomorrow we will have Branch Isole. I'm telling you, I thought my name was hard, but everyone he will be discussing about his book, God, I Believe, which is a brown bag theology for those desiring to know more about attaining spiritual peace without suffering the control, guilt, or oppressive shame often perpetrated by heavy-handed of dogmatic religion. So please tune in tomorrow at 12 o'clock p.m. Of course, like my fan page. And I have also said if you have any music requests, I don't mind doing that as well. I'm trying very hard, so please don't be afraid to get in touch with me. And as I always say, God bless. I do love you so much. You're a wonderful audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanisha. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to The Bright Side with Tanisha.
Come back daily from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern.
God bless.